It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I'm proud to announce that we are about to take bold new steps to follow through on my pledge to buy American and hire American. We are sending a powerful signal to the world. We're going to defend our workers, protect our jobs, and finally, put America first. This historic action declares that the policy of our government is to aggressively promote and use American-made goods, and to ensure that American labor is hired to do the job.
All right, that was President Donald Trump yesterday in Kenosha, Wisconsin at Snap-on Tools, and I wanted to make sure that you heard about that because that's a big deal. You know, remember what, 2 years ago, in the last few years, we've been reporting to you that companies like Disney and technical companies have been hiring foreign workers under the H-1B visa program, letting Americans go and forcing the Americans to train their foreign replacements and telling them if you don't train them to do what you do, you will not get any severance. And so it has just been horrendous, really. And I remember when I was on radio in Chicago, I had people calling and kind of telling me about this. And at the time, I hadn't heard anything about it. And I thought, it just didn't register the way it eventually did, that especially American technology experts were being replaced by foreign workers. And so that's part of what the executive order ensures, is that Americans will be given consideration first in terms of hiring, and that only the highest possibly skilled foreign workers will be brought in, and not paid cheap labor in order to do away with American workers. So that's part of it. And of course, it's using American goods and all of that. And so just it's really, really good news. It's good news to all of us. We are sick of seeing our jobs, businesses, manufacturing, everything made in some other country. Didn't used to be that way. It used to be don't buy unless it's made in America. We actually embrace that. But now people have gotten used to such cheap goods that we've lost our love for our country on this, I think. And we have to be retrained. And so I think Donald Trump is doing a good job with that. It's important that we support American workers. And I have to say, we're going to have to brace ourselves for higher prices and just be prepared for that. When I traveled to Canada to see my son and his wife, they were there in Vancouver for a long time, 10 years. The prices just amazed me. Everything we paid for was so expensive. But the reason is because Canada is so protective of its own economy, its own workers. And so that is probably going to happen to us. And I just think we have to, in order for our neighbors to have jobs and for the economy to be more healthy, we are going to have to stop taking advantage of cheap overseas labor. That's a hard word, but I really do think it's true. And speaking of money, the left is obsessed with Donald Trump's taxes. In fact, they've been sending notifications to people who've signed up on these leftist groups to demand Donald Trump's taxes be released. And it's become a mantra to them, so now everybody's talking about it. Trump's response is, you know, I don't think so. And I can say that I blame him because they will use every jot and tittle and line to accuse him of whatever, and it won't matter if it's true or not. So James Rosen has a report on that, and I want you to hear it. Here's James.
At a raucous town hall in Little Rock, Republican Senator Tom Cotton got an earful from Arkansas residents when he defended President Trump's refusal to release his tax returns.
As far as I'm aware, the president says he's still under audit. And he said he's going to release them.
Following coordinated rallies in multiple cities Saturday protesting Mr. Trump's withholding of his tax data, the president's aides stopped short of saying he would never release the returns.
We'll have to get back to you on that.
Analysts predict the issue will resurface when the Trump administration seeks to advance tax reform through Congress, as opponents question whether the chief executive or his family will benefit.
You know who'll pay for it the most? Rank-and-file Republicans like Senator Tom Cotton, who have to go back home and answer to their constituents. If he just complies with tradition and releases them, he can move forward and maybe start to get things done.
Meantime, the White House defended its decision not to release White House visitor logs on a regular basis.
There are now ethics experts on both sides of the aisle who say this is the least transparent administration in decades.
We're following the same policy that every administration from the beginning of time has used with respect to visitors log, we will comply with both the Federal Records Act and the Presidential Records Act as stated by law.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt James for a second because I want to talk about the taxes. Here's the thing. This is, from my perspective, this is the same thing that the left does all the time. They try to create some sort of narrative that Donald Trump wants to do tax reform in order to save himself money. And I would just suggest to you, they've been saying it's the same thing but different when they say Russia was the reason why Donald Trump won the election because some of his advisors were Russian agents. That's the allegation, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. And it's really ridiculous claims, but people go, well, and they keep saying it so much that people believe it. So now they're trying to accuse Donald Trump of wanting to change the tax law in order to benefit himself privately. But I would just suggest to you, when you consider the overwhelming story, which is true, that Donald Trump is a billionaire who did not need to be president of the United States, who had a marvelous life, a lush, comfortable life for him and for his children, wonderful family. And yet he spent all of those hours and those days on the campaign trail trying to win the presidency. You cannot take that away from him and actually funded most of his campaign out of his own pocket. And now that he's president, he's not even taking a salary. So those things to me argue against a man who is trying to organize and orchestrate a tax code that's going to benefit him. Donald Trump has a lot of flaws, but I don't think this is one of them. And yet the left is whipping all of us up in a frenzy because Donald Trump won't release his tax returns. He is, after all, president. It's not a law that he has to. It's a custom, but it's not a law. And we've never had, I don't guess, a president who is as wealthy. Maybe the Kennedys. Not sure how they stack up. But I'm not sure. I don't know if John F. Kennedy released his tax forms or not. I don't know that. But it is a custom, not a law. And so there you go. That's the next horizon. But on taxes, I wanted to tell you this. Yesterday was tax day. Here, this will make you feel really warm and fuzzy. In the year 2014, according to CNS News, the federal government hauled in a then-record $1,377,797,136,000 in individual income taxes. But here's the part. 35%. Well, let's just say, of the $148,606,578 individual income tax return filers that year, 35% filed what the IRS calls non-taxable returns, which means they paid no net individual income taxes. However, they did receive refundable tax credits. That was the year that the subsidies for Obamacare, where a child income credit, earned income tax credit, was received. So 35% of Americans didn't pay a cent and got back, in some cases, lots of money. In some cases, too, I know that non-Americans are eligible for these earned income tax credits. And so 35% who filed with the IRS paid no individual taxes, but taxpayers claimed $105.6 billion in refundable tax credits. Let me just see if I can give the, for those of you that are into numbers and figures, 52,062,000 filers who had non-taxable returns and paid no income taxes equaled 35% of all filers. That we've already said. But the percentage of people that got money back, These taxpayers paid total income taxes of $1 trillion, or 94.4%, in the total income taxes paid that year. 148,606,000 filers included single individuals, married couples filing jointly, married persons filing separately, surviving spouses, and heads of households. I guess the big story is that 35% of filers paid nothing, and many of them, and I don't see the percentage here, got money back from the government, lots of money back. So there you go. That's our system. Isn't it lovely? So I want to move to a different thing because I think this may be one of the most important things I'm going to share this morning. And I think Catherine Herridge tells it well. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly gave his first speech yesterday, and Catherine reports on it. Let's listen.
Transnational criminal organizations, including drug cartels and gangs, are building a relationship with foreign terrorist groups for financial gain.
The nexus between criminal networks and terrorist networks is real, and I would predict will get more sophisticated.
In his first major policy speech on threats facing America, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly predicts if foreign terrorists launch a successful plot like another 9/11, their operatives will not fly, they will cross through Mexico.
That individual or individuals get into the United States through the southwest border. I'm staying up late at night, every night, to try to prevent that from happening.
Last week, two Chicago area men were indicted on ISIS-related charges. Kelly said the nation is in the midst of an unprecedented spike in homegrown terrorism, citing 36 newly opened cases in 18 states over the last 12 months.
They have a single mission, and that is our destruction.
Kelly, who will visit the southern border again this week, defended the administration's aggressive approach, arguing that a strong defense frustrates terrorists, drug shipments, the cartels, and gangs. At the Justice Department, alongside FBI Director James Comey, the Attorney General hit hard on the same issue.
Because of an open border and years of lax immigration enforcement, MS-13 has been sending both recruiters and gang members to regenerate these gangs.
Both Sessions and Kelly said drug trafficking can't be separated from border issues.
We will secure our border, expand immigration enforcement, and choke off supply lines.
And Kelly shot back at media and congressional critics.
If lawmakers do not like the laws that we enforce, that we are charged to enforce, that we are sworn to enforce, then they should have the courage and the skill to change those laws.
All right, otherwise, I'm going to interrupt that report, too. This is an amazing story. The Free Beacon has more detail on what John Kelly said. We'll put this on our Facebook page. FBI investigating radical terrorists in all 50 states as threats hit peak. It's unbelievable. John actually says a lot more than Catherine had a chance to report. And you may or may not have heard that yesterday morning, 10:30 in the morning, Corey Ali Mohammed shot and killed three white people in Fresno. The emphasis on white because he said he hated white people, but he also shouted Allahu Akbar as he was arrested by the police. So, but the police are saying in Fresno, but we're not sure about the motive, and we don't think it's terrorism. And then the head of the local mosque said, well, he's not a part of our mosque, and we're cooperate. We work closely with the police here to help identify terrorists. Well, yes, that would explain the police's response, that we're not calling this terrorism, because when the Muslim leaders work closely with police, it's usually to tap down the response, not to really help find terrorists. And that's my editorial remark on that. And so that happened yesterday morning. Meanwhile, a story I did not tell you yesterday, and I intended to, was that there was a World View conference sponsored by Brandon House in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, over the weekend. And a Muslim man dressed in a T-shirt that said, I'm American, I'm a Muslim, I open carry, I conceal carry, and I'm dangerous only if you're stupid, carrying a Quran, walked to the conference, then went out to the car and recorded a video in which he threatened and showed probably at least half a dozen weapons on this video of himself. We have a lot to be concerned about. And the Sioux Falls police did nothing, said that really he didn't do anything wrong and they couldn't arrest him. So that's the story on that. Well, coming back, Myron Abel will join me because the Paris Climate Treaty is the subject of much focus in Washington, D.C., because the president promised that he wouldn't sign it, and now it looks like some people around him wanted to withdraw from it, and other people around him want him to stay in it. So it's a dilemma. Sandy Rios in the morning.
teen pregnancy is a tough problem for everyone involved. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart today. For Jules Green, the answer seemed simple enough. She already considered herself a mother. But facing opposition on all sides, she agreed to an abortion at age 17. She attempted suicide in the immediate aftermath. And after receiving psychiatric care, Jules then spent the next 5 years working in the abortion industry. Looking back, she says she was hoping that that would make her own abortion okay. A friend had agreed to serve as a surrogate mother and wound up aborting a baby due to Down syndrome. Well, that finally opened Jules' eyes to the value of life, and it helped her repent and heal her own abortion experience and advocacy through faith in Jesus Christ. Find out more of Jules' story and resources to find healing after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. When you spend time in a tropical climate, you learn quickly. Don't walk around outside at night without a flashlight, because if you do, you're likely to walk right into a spider's web that feels like a volleyball net. Not exactly fun, especially in the dark when you have no idea where the spider whose web you just destroyed might have gone to. But that's minor compared to the danger of walking in spiritual darkness without the light of Christ on your path. The Psalms tell us that God's word is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. Psalm 19 says the commands of the Lord are radiant, giving light to the eyes, which is why there's no replacement in the life of a believer for daily time in God's word. Try out Anchor Devotional, in print monthly. Visit getanchor.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Parents in Boone County, West Virginia, are a bit perturbed after a teacher wore a jacket bearing a provocative message inside the classroom. The words "tuck frump" were on the back of the jacket, with letters comprising the F word highlighted in white. Teacher Cheryl Judy readily admits she wore the jacket, but only for a few minutes. She also said students who saw the jacket were like-minded liberals. The school district will not say if they are investigating the incident or if Miss Judy will face some sort of penalty, but several students told local newspapers that if they had worn such a profane piece of clothing, they'd be suspended. It's a fair point. Miss Judy tells the Charlotte Gazette she's proud to be a liberal, but does not push her ideas on other people. That's true. She just wears them on the back of her jacket. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
President Obama entered the United States into the Paris Climate Accords unilaterally and without the permission of Congress. This agreement gives foreign bureaucrats control over how much our energy and how much we use right here in America. No way. We're going to cancel the Paris Climate Agreement and stop all payments of the United States tax dollars to UN global warming programs.
Mr. President, don't listen to the swamp. Keep your promise. Withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Climate Treaty and send it to the Senate.
We're going to keep our money and we're going to keep our jobs here and we're going to bring jobs back. Okay, remember that.
All right, we played that for you yesterday. That's an ad that's just come out from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, reminding President Trump of what he promised when he campaigned. And now we see that people around him have a different view. And so now we might have a different outcome. Myron Abell is very vested in this issue. He's the director of CEI's Center for Energy and Environment, and he joins us this morning. Myron, it's good to talk to you for the first time in a long time. How are you?
Good, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Myron. The president, you know, did something wonderful. I know we were all excited about it when he signed an executive order rescinding all of the orders that President Obama had really signed that affected rules and regulations for the EPA, waterways, all kinds of things. And so there was a lot of rejoicing, but he did not include the Paris Climate Treaty. Why is that so important?
Well, President Obama, you know, he never ran on global warming in either 2008 or 2012. But as soon as he got elected in 2008, he tried to get cap and trade through the Congress. That failed. He didn't run on it. The Republicans lost the House and won the House in 2010. He didn't run on it in 2012. But then in 2013, he said it's the biggest issue facing the world, and that's what I'm going to concentrate on. So there's all this climate agenda domestically, but he also got us into a new treaty, the Paris Climate Treaty. And he said, it's not a treaty, so I can get us into it by just signing my name to it and sending a letter to the Secretary General of the United Nations. So President Trump promised to get us out of it, and it's key that he does because all these things are closely connected. Our President Obama's domestic climate agenda is supported and is part of our commitment under the Paris Treaty. So this is a very big issue.
And it actually is quite personal, Myron, and that's what we need. We need to make it personal. Let me just read a Heritage Foundation. Heritage Foundation's Nick Loras wrote this. He estimates that it will cost Americans an extra $30,000 per family of four in higher energy prices, and some 400,000 jobs will be lost, 200,000 manufacturing alone. He calls it a tax on American production. And would you agree with that?
Yes, Nick is absolutely right. And the Heritage Foundation has done great work on opposing the Paris Climate Treaty. And also, they've done great work on explaining why it's a treaty and not just an executive agreement. And this is important because if it is a treaty, then it requires ratification by the U.S. Senate, a vote, a two-thirds vote, which would be 67 senators. Well, there aren't anywhere near that number in the Senate to vote for it. So that's why President Obama tried to avoid saying it was a treaty. And this is why President Trump needs to say, I promised I'd get us out of it. It is a treaty, and I'm going to send it to the Senate, and I'm going to have them vote it down, and then the entire world will know it's not just me. I'm not Earth's enemy number one. The U.S. Senate, which represents the every state, has said no. So this is why this is a very important issue.
Myron, help us to understand this. You know, I think most people understand that when Barack Obama ran for president, he promised that he was going to destroy the coal industry. He was very plain about that, very blunt. And coal miners in various states know that he has done a great job of nearly destroying the coal industry. But this Paris Treaty Agreement would force the United States to do drastic cuts in fossil fuel energy by 2025, even more cuts. What would that look like?
Well, the goal of the underlying UN treaty, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and the goal of the Paris Treaty, which is part of the UN Framework Convention, the goal is to eliminate all fossil fuel use, first in the United States and Europe and other developed countries, and then throughout the world. So, and it's a timeline, it's put on a timeline that requires every country that's a party to the Paris Treaty to submit a new commitment every 5 years that has steeper cuts in greenhouse gas emissions than the previous commitment. So once we get into this, if the president doesn't get us out and we're in it, every 5 years we have to submit a new commitment which will further get us out of coal, get us out of natural gas, get us out of oil, which runs our cars and trucks, and move over to renewable energy or just stop using energy. So this is a huge economic obstacle that's right in front of us, and that's why I think it's obvious that President Trump has to keep his promise.
So it's also natural gas. I mean, all right, so that's not – and when they say greenhouse gas, Myron, why don't they just say CO2? Is there something broader about the description greenhouse gas?
Yeah, there's several other trace gases and some of them are actual pollutants. CO2, carbon dioxide is a naturally occurring trace gas that's necessary for life on Earth. It's not a pollutant. It's not what you see in a smokestack, but anything you burn is going to produce carbon dioxide. That's what creates the energy. So the oxidation, taking the oxygen molecule and combining it with a carbon molecule. But there are other greenhouse gases, which are trace gases, which they're also trying to control. One of them is methane, which is the principal gas in natural gas. So this is not just war on coal. It's war on coal, oil, and natural gas.
So if they had their way, all the cars would be powered by electricity? Or do they allow electricity these days? If the electricity comes from water?
I think at night you wind up the rubber band and then you get in your car in the morning and turn on the rubber band. I'm not quite sure. The world gets 80% of its energy from coal, oil, and natural gas, and those are the cheapest parts of our energy supply globally. So if any country has to close down a coal-fired power plant, they're going to have higher-priced electricity eventually. So this really does, as you said earlier, undermine our economy and our jobs and, you know, just the household budget. If the electric rate is going up, if the price of cars is going up because it's required that they get better gas mileage. So this really is a very broad assault, and it's also the kind of thing that President Trump said he wanted to get us out of. He said we have too many involvements in the United Nations. We need to cut back on these, and we need to concentrate on the ones that are in our national interest. This treaty is not in our national interest.
You know, Myron, let me go back to this. I should have pulled this clip this morning because heaven knows I've heard it enough since I was in radio in Chicago. It's when Barack Obama famously said that energy prices would necessarily skyrocket under my plan. He actually said that. Energy prices will necessarily skyrocket. Well, that's, some of us remember when the gasoline prices shot way up. People in California, I think of them, they were especially affected because they don't have any public transportation to speak of. And so people were having to stay home. People got a glimpse of what it would be like if they could not afford to buy gasoline. And we've had a reprieve from that. But he's not talking about just gasoline. He's talking about keeping your homes cool in the summer, keeping them warm in the winter. The thermostats you'd have to be cold and hot both in order to satisfy and meet these requirements. And the other thing too, Myron, the China and India are sort of they have a special out in this treaty, don't they?
Well, the Paris Treaty is different. The Kyoto Protocol in 1997, which President Clinton, to his credit, recognized and said was a treaty and required ratification by the Senate, which is why it never went into effect in the United States because the Senate never ratified it. The Paris Agreement is different because every country that is party to it has to make a commitment. But here's why you're correct. The Chinese commitment is that our emissions will peak, that is our buildup of our economy and building of coal-fired power plants and natural gas plants and gasoline use, that will peak by 2030. So that's their commitment. India's commitment is even more favorable to them. They have committed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions if the developed countries pay them to do so
under the Green
Climate Fund.
Well, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, Myron. We pay everybody to do everything.
Well, it's a poor country. I mean, they understand that this is a very costly thing to try to switch from conventional energy to renewable energy, and they say, we can't afford it. We're a poor country. India has hundreds of millions of people who don't have any electricity at all, and they have hundreds of millions of people who have very unreliable electricity that only comes on occasionally. So, you know, they want to electrify. They want to become like us. They want to have the benefits of modern technology and the modern way of life. So you can't blame them. That's their they've actually signed something that's in their national interest.
You know, Myron, I'm just having a memory. I was in India several years ago for about a week, and I remember leaving my beautiful hotel room and going out for a jog, And, you know, a few blocks away, I went jogging through neighborhoods where people are squatting with their outdoor fires, you know, cooking their breakfast because they don't have energy. And so just to bring home your point, that's just what the vision that went through my mind. All right, so now we have President Trump sort of backing off. He did not put this in his executive order. And so what's causing that, Myron?
Well, you know, President Trump has appointed a wide variety of people. And I would say, just to split them up in a very simple-minded way, some of them belong, like us, Sandy, to that basket of deplorables Hillary Clinton warned us about. And some of them belong to the swamp. And so, and you know, it's been said that he likes to have people around him who have different opinions about things, and then he you know, weighs their differences of opinion and makes up his own mind. So, but there are very powerful people in the administration. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson wants us to stay in the Paris Climate Treaty. The president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, wants us to stay in, and he's a special assistant and is, you know, like the right-hand man to the president. The National Security Council wants us to stay in, and the head of the National Economic Council, Gary Cohn, who's from Goldman Sachs, wants us to stay in. Now, Goldman Sachs has been for all this stuff for decades because they hope to get rich off the backs of the American people. So this is a straight profit motive for the Goldman Sachs crowd.
But then on the other side of the – who's sitting on the other side of the table? Rick Perry, new Secretary of Energy. What about Rick Perry?
Well, I think Rick Perry will be okay. I think he's expressed some. I've been told that he has expressed some hesitation about which way he's going to come down on this. I think the good news is the president's on our side. That is to say, we have no indication that he has decided to give up on his promise. So I think we have to assume that right now he's on his side, that there are powerful people in the administration who are urging him to break his promise. I think the vice president is on our side, and I think several key people in the White House are as well, including Steve Bannon, for example. So, I think it's fairly evenly balanced, and I think the president will make up his mind. And the purpose of our ad was to remind the president that he made a promise, and he's made a very big deal about, I'm the guy who's going to keep, I'm not like those politicians. I'm here to do what I said I would do. And so that's why we're running this ad, and we're encouraging people to sign a petition, and we will deliver those signatures. So if you have time, go to stopparisclimatetreaty.org, stopparisclimatetreaty.org, and sign the petition.
Okay, I think we put that on our Facebook page yesterday, but if not, we'll make sure it's up there today again, Myron. StopParisClimateTreaty.org, and we will see if we can get people to join in that, just to make their voices heard to the president. He does seem to respond. His instincts seem to be always good. I don't know. The distressing thing is, it isn't a good thing to have, I don't think, people who are diametrically opposed to what you promised. I think you can have a difference of opinion, but when you have someone who's diametrically opposed, that's a very different situation, Myron, and it creates confusion. And that we're finding this in various areas of the administration, and it is distressing. So, but you think he'll actually come down on the side of his promise?
Well, I think we have to assume that. I mean, as I say, when he gave his State of the Union address, one of the first things he said was, I just want to run through the things that I've already done to keep my campaign commitments. When he announced Neil Gorsuch as his nominee for the Supreme Court, he said in very blunt terms, I just want to say that I'm different from all those politicians. I'm here to keep my word, and this is an example of it. I said I would appoint somebody on this list, and here he is. So, he's made a big point of it, and I just think we need to point out that he was absolutely clear about getting rid of President Obama's climate agenda and getting us out of the tree.
It's kind of like when we were kids and you say, but Dad, you promised, but Mom, you promised. And that's what we're doing to the president. Myron Ebell, Director of CEI Center for Energy and Environment. Myron, thanks, and we'll see you soon.
Great. Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. I have a question for you. How closely are you living your life during the week with the songs you sing on Sunday? Without question, this is the easiest way there is to evaluate your walk with the Lord on a weekly basis. For some, there's no relationship between the two, even though the songs are sung with emotions on Sunday. There's a complete disconnect that probably no one even notices except God. In fact, it can become so routine in a person's walk that they don't even notice it themselves, and how that must break God's heart. This is serious. So from now on, every Sunday when you're singing those songs, think about living those songs and how many people will be moved closer to God as a result. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of the church by moving every person you're with today and every day closer to Jesus. And if you want to know how to do that, go to ROTW.com.
American Family Association began in 1977 as the National Federation for Decency. Founded by Don Wildman, our mission is to inform, equip, and activate people like you to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church. American Family Association is one of the largest and most effective pro-family organizations in the country, and it's because of God's blessings and the generosity of people like you.
To sharpen the faith of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ with those who don't know Him. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. This is host David Wheaton inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, to pursue that mission as we discuss a compelling topic from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on AFR Talk.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A shooter was apprehended yesterday by police in Fresno, California, as he shouted the jihadist battle cry, "Allah is greatest," after murdering three innocent passersby. Per the standard official reaction to this act of Sharia supremacist violence, the authorities insist that the perpetrator, Corey Ali Muhammad, acted alone and without ideological motive. An important fact has emerged from Muhammad's personal history, however. He did hard time in jail. Chances are that he either converted to jihad in prison or he was a Muslim prior to his conviction who was radicalized there. This jihadist act underscores the threat to public safety posed by such Islamist convicts. It can only be hoped that advisors to President Trump tempted to promote so-called criminal justice reform will be discouraged from thereby unleashing more of them on society and, in so doing, putting more of us at risk. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
What role do you think you can play in helping to de-escalate the fear? Because it's fear that's out there.
In movies, it was cowboys and Indians and the Nazis, communists, you know. Now they've chosen the Muslim community, a community who's made contributions to the world of a monumental nature.
Homeland has been criticized for how Muslims are portrayed.
Yes, it is, and we have taken that responsibility, and particularly in season 6, we have tried to be part of the cure, not part of the problem.
A different storyline.
A different storyline where we're helping these people, and a storyline that shows in this case, in this year, in this season, and that maybe the white men in government and the military establishment that are the bad guys, not the Muslim community.
Mandy Patinkin, who is one of the stars of Homeland, that series that many of you watch. I've never seen it, but my understanding is that it's all about, it has been about the threat from Sharia. I don't even know if they use the word Sharia because I haven't seen it. You can correct me. But the Sharia is the essence of the Quran, which talks about killing the infidel, talks about brutally treating women, men beating their wives, genital mutilation, and you fill in the blanks. And, of course, it covers everything else, too, from how you spend your money to the fact that Sharia is not compatible with any other set of laws. It is supreme. And so no matter what culture, country you move to, you adhere to Sharia and you ignore the laws of that country and you don't embrace and adapt. So there's a lot more to it than that, but I'm trying to simplify it. So now Homeland is taking a different turn to show, as Mandy said, that it's really the white men of this country or this world that are the evil ones, and that's what they're going to betray now. It's just amazing. For last time I looked, evil didn't really have a color. Let me just say that right up front. There are wicked people of every color, but this is not about color. This is about ideology. This is about embracing something that preaches death to people that don't agree with you. That's what Sharia law is in the Quran. So I want to repeat that just yesterday morning, Corey Alad Muhammad, as you heard Frank's commentary and we talked about it in the opening, killed, brutally murdered three men and shouting Allahu Akbar as he was arrested. But of course, the police just can't figure out what's the motive. They just can't understand what the motive is. Meanwhile, I touched on this, but I want to go back to it. In South Dakota, a Muslim man wearing a T-shirt that said, I'm American, I'm a Muslim, I open carry, I conceal carry, and I'm dangerous only if you're stupid. Zihad Jaber, who is from Saudi Arabia, he carried a Quran as he walked through. This was the Christian Worldview Weekend at the Hilton Garden Inn in Sioux Falls. There were like 500 people there, all kinds of men and women, children. One of the presenters there was a former Muslim, and he said this, his name is Shahram Hadian. It was a ticketed event, but we didn't have enough volunteers to be checking everyone coming in throughout the event. This guy came in after the event started, so the way the hotel was set up, there were too many ways to get in. It was a private event, a closed event for Christians, but that's how he got in. A retired police officer, I'm reading this from The Blaze, who was working security for the event, confronted Jaber, who told him he was the Muslim John Smith. And the officer promptly escorted Jaber out of the building. Okay, so then Jaber goes to his car and he makes a recording. And I've asked Adam to edit it a bit because of the language. But I want you to hear what Ehad Jaber, who went into this Christian Worldview conference wearing the T-shirt that he wore, what he said when he went back to his car. And while he's talking, he's brandishing something that looks like an AK-47, several handguns. And so just keep that in mind as you're listening. Here it is.
So I'm kind of speechless here, man. The parking lot is full of people parking on top of each other. Ideal Yardware, whatever that place is parked, that's full too. And you know, there's about probably 400 people in there, if not maybe 500. So you have your weapons with you. You know, if you want to be really scared, be scared. Be scared. Be scared. Be scared. Be terrified. Be terrified. And the ammo to boot. Right here. That's how I travel. That's how I travel. All of y'all. This is just.
All right, so that's, the edited version of what Ehad Jaber said, and he's showing them all the guns, showing us all the guns and all the ammunition for that. Now, Sioux Falls police claimed he didn't do anything wrong, and so they haven't done anything in response to that. I did note, and I will say again, that the local. No, that was in. I take it back. It was in the shooting in California where the police said the imam of the local mosque said, oh, this guy, Corey Ali Muhammad, he's not part of our mosque. And we work closely with the Fresno police. And, you know, we're helping them find the bad guys. And, you know, we reject this, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, you have to know that the Muslim Brotherhood, under the Obama administration and Homeland Security, they were invited, trust me, even into the FBI, into the buildings for regular meetings to consult, to advise. And, of course, their advice always is, hey, it's not about Islam. It's not about Islam. Of course, the thing of it is, Jaber, you know, carried the Quran into this meeting. Here are Christians at this conference, 500 of them, and this guy's out in the car after trying to infiltrate. They said he disrupted the conference when he went in, but he didn't do anything wrong, so Sioux Falls police can't do anything. I think, actually, something can be done legally about this. I should turn to you, law enforcement. My husband is not with me this morning. I'll ask him because he's former FBI, but I have a feeling, methinks, perhaps, that's not acceptable, but call me crazy. And I want to just go back for a second to the John Kelly, the head of Homeland Security, did his first speech yesterday at Washington University. And he did say that the FBI has opened terrorist investigations into all 50 states. The problem is the FBI, under the leadership of James Comey, and as a result of the training in Quantico, where the manuals have been scrubbed, they haven't got a clue what they're dealing with. And neither do local police enforcement. The only hope we have for local police and sheriffs, et cetera, is that private entities, people that you hear on this program sometimes, are going around the country and briefing law enforcement agencies about what Islam and Sharia is all about so that they can actually understand. And they don't say, oh, gee, we're just not sure why this person did this. Wonder what that's all about. It can't be terrorism because he's not connected to some command post in the Middle East getting instructions. So scratch that one off our list. So it's not a very big comfort to me that the FBI has opened terrorist investigations into all 50 states because I don't think they really know what they're doing or what they're looking for. Now, there are exceptions. My understanding is that there are sort of pockets of young agents who have managed to learn in spite of their lack of training at Quantico. And so that encourages me, and I'll tell you that. So this is what John Kelly had to say. This is all bad news, but it gets much worse. Experts estimate that perhaps 10,000 citizens of Europe have joined the caliphate in Syria and Iraq. Thousands more are from nations in Asia, Africa, and the Western Hemisphere. They've learned how to make IEDs, employ drones to drop ordnance, and acquired experience on the battlefield that by all reports they're bringing back home. These highly trained terrorist fighters are likely to return to their countries of origin and wreak murderous havoc across Europe, Asia, and the United States. And he also goes on to say many are citizens of countries in our visa waiver program. They can more easily travel to the United States, which makes us a prime target for their exported violence. He says the threat to America has metastasized and decentralized, and the risk is as threatening today as it was that September morning almost 16 years ago. We are under attack from terrorists both within and outside of our borders. They are without conscience and they operate without rules. They despise the United States because we are a nation of rights, laws, and freedoms. That's not the only reason, I might add. It is because we are the so-called crusaders. Even though we don't, as a country, we can no longer say that we embrace Christ. They think we do. Some of us really do embrace Christ, and we are definitely the targets, as we saw over the weekend in Sioux Falls, and Jews too. But the Islamists regard all of America as crusaders, and so it's not just because we're a nation of rights, laws, and freedoms. It's because we are a Christian nation from their perspective. People of the book, as they would say it in another way. And Kelly goes on to say they have a single mission, and that is our destruction. And so it is true. You know, this whole business of... I'm just going to go on to this one. This actually is related because this is shocking to me, to be honest. Do you remember that dossier that was on President Trump? And I've mentioned it many times. I will mention it again. It is this dossier prepared by this former British intelligence agent that claimed Trump went to Russia and slept in a bed with prostitutes in order to defile, because it was the bed, because it was the bed that Barack Obama and Michelle had slept in. And it, the rest of the dossier is just that ridiculous. So it was totally debunked as some kind of a worthless piece that somebody paid a lot of money for. And it was initially Democrats, assuming Hillary Clinton operatives trying to get stuff on Trump. And then it turned out to be Republican opponents. No one has ever named anyone who paid this person for this ridiculous report. But now we're hearing from CNN, of all sources, that the FBI director is actually claiming that this was the dossier upon which he based his surveillance of Carter Page and other members of the Trump team. I'll just let Evan Perez tell you himself. He was on with Wolf Blitzer. Let's listen.
Well, Wolf, U.S. officials tell CNN that last year, the FBI used a dossier of allegations of Russian ties to Donald Trump's campaign as part of the justification to get approval to secretly monitor Trump associate Carter Page. Now, those sources say that the FBI director, James Comey, has cited the dossier in some of his briefings to members of Congress in recent weeks as one of the sources of information that the Bureau used to bolster its investigation. Now, this includes approval from the secret court that oversees the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, known as FISA, to monitor Page's communications. Now, to obtain permission to target Page, the FBI and the Justice Department would have to present probable cause that he was acting as an agent of a foreign power, including possibly engaging in clandestine intelligence gathering for a foreign government. Now, Comey and other top Justice Department officials would have had to sign off on that request. Last year, Page was identified by the Trump campaign as an advisor on national security matters, though it has since said that he had limited interaction with the campaign as a volunteer.
And then how surprising is it that this was even done?
Well, it is surprising because Comey's briefings to lawmakers stands in contrast to the efforts in recent months by the Bureau and U.S. intelligence agencies to try to distance themselves from that dossier. U.S. law enforcement and intelligence officials have said that U.S. investigators did their own work separate from the dossier to support the findings that Russia tried to meddle in the 2016 presidential election in favor of Donald Trump. Now, our sources say that Comey hasn't mentioned the dossier in all of these lawmaker briefings.
So, did you catch that? This is Evan Perez on with Wolf Blitzer on CNN. And he's telling us that the head of the FBI, James Comey, used that fake dossier to go before the FISA court to get a warrant to surveil Carter Page, who was associated with the Trump campaign at the time. He says he was a volunteer. His title was something like national security something, but he said it was. So they used this fake document as proof in the FISA court to surveil. That's serious. That's really serious. You think the FBI doesn't know when a document is like fake? They can't. All intelligence agents that I've talked to or interacted with have said that this thing was so bogus, nobody took it seriously. Remember, that's the one that John McCain thought he had something. He actually flew to Europe to pick it up, and it was already out. It had already been circulated. He was duped completely, and then he used it himself to try to debunk, discredit Donald Trump. Look, I'm sure Donald Trump has done a lot of things. We know about many of them. But this was not something that he was doing. This was total fabrication, like a tabloid. And this is what the FBI director uses in the FISA court to surveil one of Trump's advisors. This is amazing. And I want to say more about that maybe tomorrow. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.